Hello.
Oh, hey, Merlin. How are you doing?
Hello, Dan. I didn't know you'd be stopping by today. How's your family?
I like this. That's a good one.
Should I keep going? It's the new character.
No, I mean, it's the whole time. It's the whole show, I think.
Okay. You ready? Should we keep going with it?
Yeah, let's do it.
I haven't seen you in a coon's age. You're taller than a big drink of water. Look how you've grown, Dan. Elijah Methuselah Benjamin.
I feel like you would have
an elephant's eye.
Big, like, handlebar mustache going with that.
Maybe. If the casting people decided to, I'm going to say, you're ready for a title. If the casting director had decided to trend Brimley, I think we would definitely have some kind of a very extravagant mustache. That's one reason The Thing is such a terrifying movie. It's the first and only time many of us ever saw Wilford Brimley without a mustache.
When people talk about The Thing as being something
like they always say, you can't unsee it.
You can't unsee it. That's what they mean. What was the thinking behind that?
Is that Wilford Brimley? I think it's Wilford Brimley. I'm pretty sure it's Wilford Brimley.
Because he had the mustache before that, right?
I don't know if he had it in Cocoon.
No, he did. He totally. Hold on. Now we got to consult.
Please look it up and take your time, because I'm going to give you another example.
He totally did.
We were watching that season of Parks and Rec that's about, you know, the merger. You're not a big Parks and Rec person, right?
I've seen some of it, but
I just want to make sure. No, it's just fine. It's my comfort show. It's my absolute fallback show. But there's a season where Leslie and team have organized a merger between the two cities, Eagleton and Pawnee, and Eagleton's the fancy one, and, you know, Pawnee is the, you know, the, like, normal Bad News Bears one.
Okay.
And they get rid of the Department of Horse Dressage, stuff like that. You know, the barista has a masseuse that has their own barista. And anyway, they're trying to figure out the people from Eagleton coming into Pawnee. Pawnee is the you know, town that we know. And you got to figure out if the person from Eagleton, like, how they will work with the person from, you know, Pawnee, and will we let them go. This is the introduction of Crazy Craig and Donna. You know, I want you to apologize to my best friend, Donna. and they bring in the guy who is the Eagleton version of Ron Swanson, whose name is also Ron.
Of course.
And he's played by the narrator of The Big Lebowski.
The stranger.
Sam
Elliott.
Elliott. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is another one of those things. I call this the Chevy Chase phenomenon in my house, where 90% of the Chevy Chase I know is like Fletch and pre-Fletch.
Right.
And 98% up until my kid saw Fletch and loved it. Up until Fletch, 98% of what my kid knew was literally just Community. Mm. My kid has no context for Chevy Chase.
Oh, wow.
Including SNL. No, think about it. This, your kid's the same age. Ask your Chevy Chase fan. name is three latest movies or whatever.
Right.
But anyways, and I said, you know, like I say, and you know it's going to be trouble when I begin like that. Nobody likes it when I say, you know. And I say, you know, that guy has been in a lot of stuff. And he was a total smoke show for like 30 years. He's still a very handsome man. But do people remember? Do you remember Dan Hosea Elijah Ruth Benjamin? Uh-huh. Do you remember what a goddamn smoke show Sam Elliott was the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
But they were...
He was like legit sex symbol.
He's a hard body.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's a majority, but at least a plurality of his roles, he did not have any mustache.
No.
Of course, when he grew a mustache, like Ron Swanson, of course, when he grew one, Nick Offerman, when he grew a mustache, it's the most luxurious real mustache you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
But I pulled up my Macintosh computer, and I did that creepy search.
Did you load Macintax?
No, I was just running Quick Keys.
Okay.
And File Buddy.
File Buddy.
I did the fifth creepiest search you can do on someone's name. And so I searched for Sam Elliott Young.
Oh, and right. You put Young on there. You don't know what you're going to get back.
Yeah, feet, net worth. And I turned my Macintosh computer 70 degrees and said, huh? And my kid's like, whoa. So do it right now. Go, just go Google.
It's safe. You know, is it safe?
Do it in. Well, I can't promise you. Young, your mom.
Sam Elliott
Search
Young.
For Sam. One thing that does still seem to kind of work is putting the most important part.
Oh, look at him with this in his little briefs.
Oh, but even in like the 80s when he had 80s hair.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this guy. Oh, my God. I don't know if there's a way to make this show art, but if you wanted
which
to make
one?
Something.
You tell me which one, because these are all good.
Him in that tank top, him in the swimsuit. The one, there's all I can see, because I'm in Google image, you know, search, so I can only see a truncated version of the title, but I'm looking at something on Reddit called Mustache of Sam Elliott, is how the page begins. But here, I don't know, what's this movie? Oh, he was in Roadhouse? I've never seen Roadhouse, you know.
I didn't know he was in that.
You know,
no, he was. I was my favorite Sam Elliott time period, and this is don't get confused here because what I'm about to say can be.
I'm going to focus 100%, except for looking at these pictures of Sam Elliott Young. I'm going to be 100% focused.
My favorite time period is when he had long hair, and when I say long hair, I don't mean hair that is sort of 70s long. I mean, when it was like, because everyone's
like,
hair
like when
was
you're
sort
watching
of
that
puffy.
thing you do, like what's considered long hair in 1964,
right?
Or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he had a luxurious mane that when you paired it with this absolutely, I'm gonna send you a photo, stunning mustache.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so here's one,
but this like is the long hair of 1989 Roadhouse kind of hair length.
Look at this one.
This
is that Reddit. I'm going to click. I don't usually look at the internet, but I just sent you an image. This is from a Reddit thread called Sam Elliott 1970s featuring the mustache of Sam Elliott. So I don't know what movie.
Yes, I saw that one. It's amazing.
But did you click it and make
yes,
it
big? Yes.
Like, really look at the corners.
Yes.
Of them bars.
Now I'm going to tell you something and this will probably not surprise you.
Okay.
First of all, well, some backstory for this is it's not just about being able to grow a mustache. Most men can grow some kind of mustache. However, most...
Depends on how you define it. Like most men can stop shaving long enough for hair to appear above their lip.
Right.
Now, it does not... And now, for some guys, including me for years, that would never make anything approaching a mustache. I would have to do like a John Waters with eyeliner to make it look like a mustache.
I can and have grown a mustache that looks just like
it makes you
this,
look very evil. It makes just, you look very evil.
Just like this picture that you have taken. I've grown one just like this.
You look like a Miyazaki character.
But
like,
I do not do look anywhere near as amazing. He looks amazing with this. And I just look... I don't know, dude.
I totally know what you mean. It's one reason
I can grow it, but I can't wear it like he can.
I think you made a good distinction. Like there's different ways I could choose to grow or cut my hair. At some point in my late 30s, if I wanted to, I've grown a beard. I've grown long hair. I've had it all the different ways. I've had different beards. Of course, like any man who has any sense, when you shave off your beard, you got to do it in little bits and take photos. You got to do one like you live in the Castro.
Right.
You got to do one like you're Hitler. You know, that's fun. And I have a lot of photos of that if you want to see some. Oh, I still got some incredible ones. But you're right. There's a thing John Roderick said. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember. But he said, everybody gets the beard that their face deserves. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. You don't get the beard you want. You get the beard you deserve.
You beard what you get and you don't get upset.
Right. Yes.
That's what teacher Rima used to say. But no, you're absolutely right. And who's another one? Rob Delaney, the comedian who some people know from a small role in Deadpool 2, but the very funny comedian Rob Delaney, he just grows a mustache like ringing a bell. Mm-hmm. And there's others out there, but there's some kinds of guys where it's like, it seems like over Labor Day weekend, they've grown an entire new personality.
Right.
With other guys like us, you're very carefully like trimming it. And it's kind of like a comb over for your chin, where you're sort of like trying to like cut it in a way that like nobody will notice that I have a meat beard. if I cut my grizzle.
See, I don't have this problem. I can grow the most. This is
because you have an eating disorder, Dan.
I have one talent, I think, and that's being able to grow facial hair. And I can grow.
Is that a talent or a gift?
It's a talent.
Well, in your orthodoxy, what's it considered?
Mandatory.
Okay, like don't eat shrimp, grow a beard.
Yeah,
mazel tov.
And I grow beards.
And the mezuzah is not the stick you read the book with. That's the thing.
No, you're thinking of the yod. The yod is the yod. Little pointer with the finger at the end of it.
I think
yod queen.
Yod is one of Baron Harkonnen's. Yes, guys, I'm pretty sure. I will kill him.
Yeah.
Did you see?
Not yet. I'm trying to this weekend. I think.
See it. Please see it. I hate when people fucking. I hate when people say this to me. It really annoys me. But I rarely say it. But like, see it as big and as loud as you can.
Yeah, and no, I'm gonna do that.
It's
I want to.
Because like, and yeah, and when you've seen it, there's a scene I want to talk about that I think.
But I actually had a full handlebar.
So your gift from Jouet, you don't eat shrimp. As part of your eating disorder, and also you can grow a mustache and beard as quick as you damn well please, faster than an ordinary American man. If I
much
can
faster,
say.
I had
thick like rope.
2 weeks ago, I had a full on beard and handlebar mustache with the little curled up ends and everything. Thick, big.
When you say thick, yeah. I keep imagining you hold your right
hand
up. I want
you to think up something.
Hold your right hand up in a fist.
Yeah, I'm doing all. Like I'm already kind of doing that. I do that the whole time that we record. Nose, the whole time we record, I do that.
At a 90-degree angle, uh-huh. And then kind of go strong like yeah. This, and you shake it a little bit like yeah. A Russian man.
Yeah.
What's the kind? Is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. That's exactly what we're talking about.
You got any photos? This could be the show as far as.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think I took one. I can go look after. Mm-hmm. But I, you know,
a lot of photos.
It's like it's not something you can like. I also enjoy male pattern baldness.
Finish that thought. It's not something you can.
Well, I'm coming back to it. It's not something yeah. I can be proud of because I had nothing to do with mm-hmm. it. I have male pattern
that's
baldness.
Why I say, you know, it's a gift. This is why one of the numerous reasons I'm a word nerd, and this is for example why I don't say that I'm lucky. I say that I'm fortunate.
You know, tall people who are
very different.
People who are very tall, you know, either
Tommy Tune is very tall.
Yeah, they walk in somewhere and they're like
a very good dancer.
They're very happy with themselves usually that they're that height.
I
would be too.
I would be so much happier with myself.
And
I would be a lot taller. If I was 5'11", I'd be happy.
Well, that's how my son is.
I mean, 6 feet.
He's just
6 feet is kind of like having a D-cup. You know, you know, that's a monkey's paw. Like you asked for a D cup and you got it. And now you have back problems. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a similar thing. Like when I was like, cause I had always heard if you shave, it makes it grow in blacker. That's what they say about ladies. But if you don't shave your legs. So what I would do is I would shave constantly and I didn't need to.
Right.
And I would shave my underarms too, because I really wanted the hair under my underarms to grow.
Uh-huh.
That was the most important thing. What I wanted was an arm beard.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, if you got any photos of that, please share those.
I'm glancing through.
For some notable beards of the
so what I did, I don't know, you know, everybody knows about Movember, where you're supposed to grow a mustache in November, but there is another one called
you have to grow a beard and write a book.
There's another one called March Mustache. So I was getting getting a regular haircut, and the lady who cuts my hair, who's a barber, she's like, Dan, she's like, you know, I was joking. I'm like, I should just do the mustache. She's like, you know, what you should do is the trend. This is the trend for 2024, she said. And I said, what's that? And she's in the know. She knows what she's talking about. And she said that the trend
she's
now.
She's got her little, you know, cosmetological fingers on the pulse.
She's got a barbershop. Right? I mean, she has to know. And she said for 2024, the trend is to do something where you don't have a beard, but you trim so that you have just, it's somewhere between stubble and a beard, right?
Right.
And then grow your mustache in. And I said, and she's like,
that feels very Sam Elliott.
She's like, you would look great like this. And I said, well, first of all, like you're already getting your tip. So like, stop, but I'll do it because it's March mustache or whatever. So that's what I have going on right now. And I've gotten positive feedback that I don't think was all lies.
You've got to keep the mustache. Like, I understand the desire to want to make a big mustache. I totally understand that.
I'm not doing, to understand, I'm not doing too big.
You have to understand that it does make you look empirically evil when you grow a long mustache.
Me personally or anyone?
It makes you personally look personally evil.
Okay.
Especially because you like to shoot these weird angles of your face where you look like the long good side of an axe.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a thing Madeline and I used to do called Mustache Night. That's, I'm trying to find some actual real ones. But Sam Elliott,
he's the king. He's the king of the mustache.
I feel like I should see Roadhouse. My takeaway from Roadhouse, because actually, and also Roadhouse is quoted on Parks and Rec a lot. But Roadhouse is also like, isn't it like surprisingly viscerally violent?
Roadhouse.
Like, doesn't he like tear out a guy's, like part of a guy's body during a fight or something? Doesn't he tear out an esophagus or a spine or something?
He might. I mean, 1989.
It sounds to me like you have not seen it at all.
This is the movie with Patrick Swayze in it.
It's called Roadhouse, and it used to be on TBS nonstop.
Yeah, I know that I've seen.
I think
this.
He's a bouncer at a
bar. Yeah, that's right.
And if memory serves, nobody puts baby in a corner. I think that's it.
It's a different movie, but Sam Elliott is a bouncer. But he's like Swayze's like tutor.
Does he have
mentor.
Heart of gold? Oh yeah. Is he helping? Is he like have an adopted child or something, like
I don't know.
Something lovable?
I can't remember. I don't remember. I don't know, and I don't care.
No, I feel the same way. Like there's just, it's so easy not to care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care about anything.
A lot of times. But the problem is sometimes you'll try to strap on a plot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like when you do that, there's another one. There's a recent one of me where I look very old and feeble. There was a period a few years ago when I had I'll send it to you. I can't find any of the good ones. I'm trying to find you one of my good Castro ones or one of my good Hitler ones.
I like that last one. Is that last one what you're saying is feeble?
Yeah. That's from a couple months ago. I think it's from a birthday dinner.
Where's me. Eating, my phone?
I don't know. Here's me eating seafood. That's not it.
I don't see it.
Hang on. You
look around. Siri, find pictures of beard. Let's see. Here's my kid. No, but there was this period where I had really weird long hair and it was very unflattering. I'll find that. That's a great look. Oh, I know the one to find for Dan. I know the one. Oh my God, look how floppy my hair is here, you guys. Oh God, I look very ill. Okay. I look very ill. Oh, it's okay. I'm going to send this anyway. Hi everybody. Welcome to Back to Work. It's a show about creativity.
See, I love that look for you.
Which one?
This one with the long hair that you just sent is excellent.
See, when you say you love all of them, it sounds like you're kind of making it up.
I like these all.
I'm sending you a combination of long hair and weird facial hair. And I actually have, knowing the bit that you like to do about me. The one about how I am singularly unlike other people old. It's a funny bit. And so I have one that is one of the best photos I've ever taken of myself. And then okay, ready? It's gonna come now, so to speak. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. And I really super overworked it in editing to like bring out all of the, so, but this is me looking like, and I look like a Robert Eggers movie here. Please check your text.
Oh my gosh. I love this.
Doesn't it look like I work in a lighthouse?
Oh my God. Yeah. You're in the movie Lighthouse with your buddy Willem. You're actually a stand in.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, do you think I trend more Pattinson or Willem?
Willem from this picture.
Yeah. 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 You know, he knows how to, Robert Eggers knows how to deploy that man. And that's just a true fact.
Oh yeah.
Robert Eggers. He's on my list of weird directors. That's probably enough stuff. Oh God. No, this one's horrible. Oh no. This is a terrible beard here. Look at this. Look at this one. Oh no. And I'm making a face. Cause you know, I have kind of a, as they say, a lantern jaw.
Good. That's really good.
What are you going to do with all of these? Do you think?
Just add them to my crazy wall with the yarn. I just showed my son
a beautiful and dangerous mind.
Yes, I just showed my son A Beautiful Mind. He'd not seen it before, which is parenting fail.
Did he know the twist?
He did not know the twist. He did not know it.
Did he pick it up?
Oh no, he didn't guess it. He's so good at guessing. Like I showed him Mr. Robot. I showed him Fight Club. All he's like 30 seconds into it, he's like, that wasn't obvious to you.
It sucks to watch House with my wife. because oh, I'm the one. It means everything to me to guess. This has been covered much more extensively on other podcasts I do. But I, when we watch House as a family, which we do, we're on season 5, episode 3 right now. I like to guess at the top, you know, does the rule of Law and Order apply here? Meaning, if there's a celebrity in it, will that person be the person who did it or we think did it? Will this be the person who's sick or isn't sick? So is it going to be the fancy lawyer lady or her assistant? Here's one. You see a beautiful MILF getting painted by a man, and it's Brecken Meyer from Clueless. And everybody's like, obviously it's Brecken Meyer that's going to be sick. And my wife almost always guesses it before me, and it makes me livid. Do you remember Clueless? It was a really good movie.
Yeah. I feel like less hair that I have on top of my head, the more I'm justified to grow like a really, really massive beard. But I feel like after a little while, I don't get
what
into
about
the
ear. Is an ear beard a thing?
No.
Cause I think I could grow two of those this week.
No. Mm-mm. No, I'm going to say no.
I'd like to, you know, like when you see those crazy contests, like, it's the weirdest crazy mustache contest and people make sculpture out of their mustaches. It's big in, like, I want to say like Bavaria. I think there's a contest every year, right? It's just, you can look up a weird mustache contest, which is what I call being 19. Weird mustache but you'll do stuff like you'll connect different parts to each other. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm, like when your beard and your mustache get long enough, honestly, they make sculptures. They use like some kind of like a dippity do to like turn it into like sculpture. But like if I could grow something between my ear and my nose and have that connect up, maybe it would be like dreadlocks. It would be kind of like dreadlock. It would be like, okay, here, I'm going to pull it all together. You ever see the movie Battlefield Earth?
Yeah, I have seen
starring
that
John Travolta.
Yes, a long time
remember
ago.
It looks like he's got boogers coming out of his nose.
Yeah, the whole time.
He's got that weird nose thing. That's how I would look like. I would look like that, or I would look like Jane Child, the singer who had that hit.
That movie.
Don't Want to Fall in Love? I don't want to fall. She had that thing where she had a piercing in her nose that connected to her ear, and that was kind of her whole deal.
Yeah.
I want to do that, but with my ear hair meeting my nose hair. And then I'm going to move to Bavaria and I'm going to become Das Man in as regards interesting Bavarian mustache contest, which is also a really good Guided by Voices EP. We covered a lot. It's 22 minutes in. Yeah. I'm still looking at photos of myself.
I mean, that could be a whole show. At least you just have such a gorgeous head of hair for someone your age.
Thank you, Dan. Here's a photo I took. I'll show you.
I wish I had half of that.
Well, you know, here's the thing about life is, and I'll make this as quick as I care to.
Look at that hair. Look at that. It's amazing.
You know what the singer Morrissey says? He says, I want the one I can't have. And it's driving me mad. It's driving me mad. It's driving me mad. It's driving me mad. And I'm thinking here of my girlfriend college, Rachel, who was really, really cute. And Rachel took that picture of me in a bathtub.
Oh, okay.
I'll send you this photo. She sent that picture of me. She took that picture of me in a bathtub holding a can of Busch beer and a bar of soap. And she called that photo suds. I've just sent it to you. that's some hair, right?
Yeah. That's gorgeous. That's very, I'm going to say something you're not going to like. It's okay. Very Eddie Vedder of you.
Crunch.
Very Eddie Vedder.
Call me Merlin. Yeah. something like, I was talking about how good the song Don't Stop Believing by Journey is.
Yeah.
And John Gruber said, yeah, well, at least you have his hair. And then it occurred to me that I should send him what my hair looks like the minute after he said that, which is last night as I was here at my office printing. Now, I did not do anything funny. You know, like sometimes you do something funny. Mm-hmm. I might have taken two photos just for clarity because I'm not good at selfies. But this is not overworked. This is literally how my hair looked last night. I'm clicking. Oh, it's raw, so it might be big. And I'll come through eventually. So that's how my hair looks right now.
Just okay.
So you know. And yeah. It's very, I look like a Muppet.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Ooh. Hey, everybody, welcome to Dan's program, Back to Work, where we talk about #, creativity. Almost all of the photos I take of myself are to make fun of my hair. I'm looking So like
see, every photo I take of myself or taken of me does make fun of my hair.
Oh, man. Because
there's no two ways about it.
We might be made for each other. Okay, so like here, I'm on my Macintosh computer, and I'm not looking at Sam Elliott. But for example, I just went into the area of people and pets, and I clicked on my name because I love the face stuff in photos. Like I when I'm meeting one of the other moms, I can say, "Oh my god!" And here's a picture of our kids together when they were three. I do that. It's creepy, but it's amazing. What I'm sending you right now is when you go to Merlin and go to the top, this is what it looks like. I don't think there's anything unseemly in there. So that gives you an idea of
what the header image is epic of you. You look at that. This is very Andy Warhol.
Oh, those are fantastic. That's a fellow named Graham Ballantyne. Oh, wait, sorry. No, wait. This is Gilbert Tang took those at an event.
I don't know how that guy just to make me not look like a ninny.
That's really funny.
There's you in the middle doing your very best Patrick Bateman with the tie.
Kind of. Sure, mm-hmm. I could see that.
I need to return some videotapes.
You know, my favorite Huey Lewis album is Sports. I can't find it, and who cares? But I was going to find more of those. Actually, if you go to my new weblog or blog that I'm playing with, you'll see it in the header. It's something like merlin.ghost.something, I think. I have a website somewhere. Yeah, go to merlin.ghost.io and look at the header image there. That's from that scene.
Oh, God.
Is that a good photograph?
Yeah, hell yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. So this is our program. We've been doing this non-contiguously since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So William Henry Harrison doesn't count. And, you know, my friend went to William Henry Harrison High School in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about William Henry Harrison?
Mm-mm.
Let me pull this up and refresh my memory. I think he's the one who was only in office for a month. Yeah, 31 days. But he's still, because he was president. Oh, talk about some hair. Oh, look at this chode. Holy crap. Oh, look at this, Dan. Squad goals. I found your new look, Dan.
Okay.
Your new look is the president, William Henry Harrison. This is a photograph from the White House.
Oh,
not the White House.
Yeah, it's
what do you think of that?
Hitting too close to home.
A widder's peak.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's an episode of Sherlock, and I can highly commend that y'all check out everything but the last season of Sherlock. It's a fantastic show, but there's this one moment from Sherlock that I still think about all the time. Can I share it with you?
Mm-hmm.
So you understand the premise of Sherlock Holmes and of the TV show of the what's the guy's name? Stephen Moffat. Have you ever seen Sherlock?
Yeah, the one with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
and
it's a great show.
And the kid from The Office.
Yeah, the kid, Henry.
There's one where he's trying to figure out, it's a very interesting, I think it might be the second or third episode. It's the one, it's called Study in Pink, which is a play on Study in Scarlet. And these people are dying from like some weird thing, and they're taking pills, and they're trying to figure out why these people are, you know, taking their own lives with these pills. And he's investigating this guy who's a taxi driver. And you remember in the show, the thing that, you know, makes it very Sherlock, and you see this influence so many places now, but like he sees stuff nobody else sees, right? He notices things nobody else notices. He notices the scratches around the charging port on John's phone and is able to infer that whoever owned that phone before him was an alcoholic who had trouble getting it on the charging stand every night. Stuff like that, right? I'm just clarifying that you understand the premise.
I get
of Sherlock,
it. Yes.
Right?
No, I totally get it.
You're doing something else. I can tell you're positive.
I'm not. I'm just sitting here. I'm just sitting here. No, I
want more quickly.
I'm starving, but I am not eating.
What happened? Oh, no, it's the eating disorder. That's the thing. Are you going to purge? You're going to binge first? So what you do?
I haven't had time to eat yet.
All the elk you can get. Yeah, time.
You remember when you sent me meats in the mail?
I've sent you a lot of things.
Yeah, I know, but you remember when you sent meats?
I think I did send you meats.
No, you did.
So... Okay. What was
they were very
about?
Good. There was elk. There was.
Was Sam Elliott? No. William Henry Harrison.
Sam Elliott's.
What was I talking about? No. What was I talking about a minute ago? When I corrected you, what was I talking about?
Oh, you want me to roll it back?
Yeah.
All right. Hang on.
This is a show about pound sign productivity, creativity. It's probably going to be about facial hair or hair. It's not, I completely forgot what I was going to say. If it occurs to me later, I'll bring it back. But that bums me out. That I always feel like this is the problem. I think I got long COVID. I think I'm old. And I think my neurological condition has decided to do some new slaloms.
I can't. I would have to stop the recording and everything else.
Yeah. I don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
William Henry Harrison. You know, Ohio has the most presidents right now.
Ohio the most.
Hi. Yes. they have the most people who have been elected president. This is true when I was a kid and living in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still true today. You got Taft. You got Harrison. You got Zelensky. You got Kroger. You got McDonnell Douglas. I don't remember all of them. But boy, I really hate when I forget things. So this is a show about pound sign creativity and beards. And I think you might have mentioned that you have something to tell me about that you like.
I do. I have two things. And I'm going to give you the choice.
Can I just have one of them at a time, Dan?
Would you?
Unless you want me to read the other one while you're reading. We could read them at the same time and save a lot of time.
Do you want Coda or do you want Shopify first?
To read at the same time as you?
Yeah, to do it at the same time.
Yeah, build it beautiful.
All right, build it beautiful.
You put it in left and right, yeah. Mix it, like kind of like a kiss me love. Just do hard separation left and right. And also please add a Yoko Ono track to it.
Oh my God. The one where she just yells.
Kiss me love. Just one kiss will do. Why me? Why you? Broken mirror, white terror. That song on Double Fantasy scared me a lot.
Yeah.
When I was 12.
Yeah. That was the point, I think, of it.
Hey, Dan, tell me about something you like.
I'd like to tell you about Shopify.
Shopify.
You know,
I think I used Shopify yesterday.
You used it as a creator or as a customer?
I used it as a consumer of hard goods.
Yeah.
I use it all the time. But I'm gonna mute because it's loud outside. Mm-hmm. And hey Dan, what do they do over at the wonderful company Shopify?
I will tell you all about Shopify. These guys are amazing. They've been around since the dawn of time. And they are the guy, like when you have an idea that you want to sell something, well, it could be a service, it could be a product, it could be whatever it is. They're just sitting there. They're like, we're here. Like we're here. You know what I'm saying? Like we've been here and we're ready to help you sell whatever the stuff is that you want to sell. I've talked about my little story of how I've sold t-shirts and mugs, and like every 5x5 store in the past has always been on Shopify, going back to the beginning of time. The most recent thing that I sold was a whole series of t-shirts on there, but you can really sell anything that you want on Shopify, and they take all of the headache out of doing this. First of all, they're a global commerce platform, and they're going to help you sell at every stage of your business, whether it's, I think I'm just going to sell a t-shirt, to like, I'm selling millions of dollars worth of products, point of sale systems, everything from the launcher app stage to the like, this, we have a real life store and we need a point of sale system, all the way to like millions of orders. They can handle it. And it really doesn't matter what you're selling. Like I said, they help you sell everywhere. And if you've ever been in a store and you're like ringing something up and they spin the little iPad, that's them. Like most of the time, because they're everywhere. When you go to an online store, it's them. Like it's them behind the scenes. It's amazing. And this is the thing for me. When I had that idea to after the Eagles won the Super Bowl a couple years back, I had the idea to do a t-shirt. I came up with the idea. I launched the store and started selling stuff. It was, you know, like a pre-order for the shirts in like an hour. I went from, I think I'm going to do this.
That is bananas, Dan.
To like, I'm selling stuff. Thing,
that's not a thing you could do when we were kids.
No way.
That's
no
bananas.
Way. And so the thing is, Shopify is powering 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. That's a big deal. And I mean, they're behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and like millions of other sites, and they're across 175 countries, which is pretty amazing. So here's the deal. This is a special deal just for our listeners. So you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/backtowork. Now you get that has to be lowercase, and the notes in the read, Merlin, actually say all lowercase. I'm supposed to emphasize this.
Don't even attempt to do it with anything other than lowercase.
Don't try it. I don't know what will happen.
Dan, avoids your warning.
It voids a warranty. It may reboot your computer. I don't know what's going to happen. So shopify.com/backtowork and go there immediately. So hit stop on this and run to your device and type that in.
What if you're driving?
I don't care. Dude, be safe.
Pull over and run home.
Yeah. Run, right.
Actually, it'd be faster to drive. Too late. Already running.
But this is... They're there to help you grow your business, Merlin, no matter what stage of the business you're in. Shopify.com/backtowork. And there's a little note here that says that we should insert a sound effect of the Shopify cha-ching sound, which I would do if I was going to like get more into editing the show. But I'm just going to say
that's just cha-ching. Let people know that's not.
It's not okay. Something we do.
I'm grateful for their support, but that's just not something
I'm not going to do that.
We don't offer a cha-ching.
But I do love Shopify.
You know what you should do? Change the form for when people buy ads and add a radio button that says, would you like a cha-ching sound?
Yeah.
Yes, no. Could you please have no be the default?
Yeah. Oh, no should always be the default. Too many radio buttons.
Well, women, am I right?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yes.
Our thanks to Shopify for supporting 5x5 and Back to Work.
Cha-ching. I have a bag here of old notebooks.
Awesome. That and $3 will get you a cup of coffee.
I know, right?
Dan, what are you doing with all those old notebooks? Are you gonna read me your journals?
No, they're all
get like a journal, Logan.
Old feel because I've switched to a different kind of notebook now.
Okay. Oh, I see. Now we're getting into the real meat of the program.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
Huh. Dan, what were you using before? What are you using now?
I used any old thing before. And now I use...
You know, you have to say if this is... You have to say if this is a paid ad. You know that.
This is not a paid ad. I got.
Is this an affiliate link?
No. I'm not even going to link it.
Is this a love song? Okay. Go ahead.
It's Cleve.
You used to use just whatever you had. You didn't
whatever
have a preference
was there.
At all until...
Honestly,
no, I don't believe that.
I'm going to tell you what I used to use, but just you.
Moleskine.
A yellow legal size notepad, and I had hundreds of them.
Full legal size.
Full
not like
legal.
We used to have the little one. Remember the little one you put by your phone? Remember those little ones?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Folio sized?
Yeah. So what this new
legal
notebook.
Legal size is very long.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is the Kleid, K-L-E-I-D, Kleid Stationery number 8909-0001. It is a 2mm grid A5 size notebook. I have three of them that I use different. One is for like work, one is for personal, one is for like household. This one is black. The size is 210x148. It has 32 sheets. It's designed by Kleid.Japan, it says on the front. And it has them.
I just created a new episode. Could you put it in notes so I can see?
I got these at
I can see what you're talking. I don't know what you're talking about. Unless do you want me to search for the word Kleid, or can you put it in
no,
notes?
No, I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna find it.
How do you spell Kleid?
K-L-E-I-D. K-L-E-I-D stationary. Oh, something came up.
And remember stationary in this one it has an E. Because you write. With stationery.
Oh, look, you
can
get these on Amazon. Look at that.
Did you know that mnemonic?
No.
Which one's an E, which one's an A? Stationery versus stationery?
No.
You remember stationery as in what you write on? Just remember that when you use the word write, like write on stationery, that write ends with the word E. And you want the stationery with the E. Also, remember that the principal is your pal.
First principle.
Kleid stationery.
All right, I put it into
it's
the show.
It's gonna blow your mind how similar this is to the notebook I use.
Is it really? And I just found these. I just found these at my local Kinokuniya.
Hi,
hey, hi.
Oh, say that again. Say that again.
Kinokuniya.
Oh, I like the way that sounds.
How do you say it? It's your store. Came out of here since San Francisco.
Is it?
Kinokuniya.
Oh, did you go to? Oh no, did you go to Japantown?
Well, I have been there, but no, they have one of these across the street from my house.
Oh my God, you guys! If you ever come to San Francisco, first of all,
Japantown has the best freaking notebooks.
Japantown has the best
everything. Everything.
Japantown. There's a mall. When we say Japantown, it is an area. And don't ask too many questions because, boy, we really screwed those people over. Oh, my goodness. Oh, boy, what we did in World War II was really not cool. But in Japantown, which is extremely near where my kid goes to school, where he can walk to the mall, right near Jim Jones's temple in the Fillmore. You know, Jim Jones's temple, the People's Temple, you know, that's now they wrecked it. And now there's a post office there. You can't even see a scrap of Jim Jones there anymore.
Nuns?
It's on the same block as the Fillmore. Oh. They don't have nuns. Okay. But so, Japantown, of course, they've got every kind of Japanese food. There's so many different kinds of sushi. There's, soba and ramen places. They're all really good, but there's one store in particular that's really a banger. If you go in upstairs, it's like the coolest, stationery store you've ever seen.
I love that store.
Or you go downstairs and it's like an entire comic shop with figures.
Right.
And that's where my kid buys his Smitskys. And, they had to super glue the boxes the unsided boxes, because people kept trying to see what Smitskys in there.
Mm.
But anyway, come to Japantown. There's so many other excellent Japanese stationery. I'm not trying to say this in a jokey racist way. It's just that the country of Japan happens to have people interested in an incredible range, way beyond what most Americans, especially given the size of the country, I will speculate, way beyond the interest that Americans have in a certain specific kind of notebook or pen or other stationery. You know, and you can get a Totoro pencil sharpener or whatever, but you can get so specific about notebooks. And best of all, Dan, a lot of your listeners are not going to like this. They're all metric, which is a much better system.
Well, it makes more sense for a lot of things except temperature.
Do you know about the eight? Do you know about the paper sizes?
I do know about the paper sizes, and they're better than what we have.
I'm going to add an incredible video to notes. Just as a placeholder here, the CGP Gray video on metric paper is one of the great videos. So tell me about your Cleed. Cleed, that does not sound like a Japanese name.
No, I know it doesn't. It doesn't.
It sounds like one of your people.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful notebook.
The Dreidlers.
That's
my new ABC sitcom, The Dreidlers.
It's a very thin paper.
I made it out of clay.
It does not bleed. Yeah. It does not bleed through very much with the pens that I've been using. It's a golem. And it has the smallest grid graph paper, as you would say.
If you've got a small grid, you got options. Right? No, because really, and this is like metric paper, it's like it's all multiples and they're all square. So if you want to make a big box, you can still make a big box.
Yeah.
But if you mentally sort of measured it correctly, now you can also do like the way your ruler has inches and then, quarter and eighth and 16th inches. That's the beauty of a grid. Even if you're just using it to just doodle. Also, I just like it better than lines for writing. I can arbitrarily decide how big my writing needs to be on that page. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not stuck in anybody's graph paper.
The Metric Conversion Act of 1975.
It was going to be huge. We had so many film strips about it.
Yeah. I was so against it as a kid. Like I was vehemently against it.
I would love to talk about this for an hour. I love metric for everything. Okay, sorry. I'm going to be Casey List for a minute because I think it's true. I love metric and would prefer metric for everything
except temperature.
Except air temperature.
Yeah, same.
Air temperature in particular. Like with boiling water, you say 100, it's fine. With my printer, that's fine. I understand what, I understand what, 240 or 270, if I'm printing this particular crappy PETG, which is a great wrapper, by the way, if I'm doing this PETG, I know I've got to do it from a range of 240 to 270. Like, it's fine. I'll figure that out. There's not enough variation in Celsius. It's crazy.
No, there really isn't.
I mean, why don't you just have five numbers? But wouldn't that be even easier? Zero could be cold and five could be really hot.
What's right. Like you hear
What's the temperature today? Three?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you hear people like, so for example, like what would you consider? Because I know you live in the Bay Area, which is cooler. What would be like you, what temperature, serious question, what temperature would you consider to be like a nice day? 72 degrees?
In Fahrenheit, right?
In Fahrenheit.
I would consider, and again, it depends a lot on stuff like wind and humidity, but just off the dome in terms of specific temperature of the air, I would call 65 a really nice day. And I would call around here, because we don't have air, especially, I would say over 75 is pretty warm.
Pretty warm, here. Right. Yeah, I agree.
Most days, it will be in the mid-50s almost every day here, except when it's not. But
right,
yeah.
So like,
and what
so
is that? What's that in Celsius?
Yeah, so like if you think about
seven?
It.
It's like seven?
Fahrenheit, 65, would be 18 in Celsius, which is weird. And then you said 75, that's 23 degrees. In Celsius.
I mean, I could like so many things. I mean, just I want to first principles, Marcus Aurelius. I want to first just go back and stipulate the metric system is better at all of the other things. The irony is that you and I sit here and bitch about, you know, not having enough numbers in the temperature, but like I still have to talk to devices because I don't know off the dome, especially for ratios. Like I've got plant food that is measured in, it's described in Imperial. And it's not interesting to anybody, but like you put two capfuls of liquid plant food into 1 gallon of water. And I'm so dumb that I found myself going to ChatGPT to figure out what that ratio is because I wanted to make a smaller amount.
Yeah.
And I think ChatGPT was even confused about that. But one thing, like, you know, when you get into like higher end cooking or you're a coffee nerd like Marco, like, a good recipe will tend to give you ingredients as a metric weight rather than an imperial volume, right? Which I think is really smart. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that distinction make sense? You know, like when you get your cereal and it says some settling may occur, this is sold by weight, not volume. You know what I mean? Like if you've got to do something and you're trying to be kind of sciencey about it, I mean, at the far end, you go like, oh, you know, have a shtickle of green onion. And then a little further down you go, like you could say something like, you know, a tablespoon of chives, right? Or that's a lot of chives, a half teaspoon of chives. But it's so much better if it said, I don't know, arbitrarily 1.3 grams of chives. Like that's going to be the same measurement everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And it makes so much more sense. And the other, I think this is true. Isn't it also true that like, there's sanity to the way the measurements of different kinds of things interact. Like doesn't a liter of water weigh, you know what? I'm way over my skis on this.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a better system. But what I'm saying is it's funny that like, you know, again, you and I, as people who were children of metric title and who also are you know, boosters of metric, that I still have to live my life in this weird world where like, you know, centimeters, kilometers, millimeters works so much better for so many, you know, things that involve length or volume or height or whatever, right? It makes so much more sense. And because they're all just based on tens. And then here I'm like, well, like when I'm using my calipers have they're really nice high-end calipers. Well, I mean, they're like, you know, $50 or whatever, but you could say you can do it in millimeters, you can do it in inches, or you can do it inches with fractions. Because if you're on this busted ass imperial system, you'll still run into things where it goes like 1 7/16. And I'm like, what is that in normal?
Who knows what that is?
Well, because then you're also getting into this thing where like, you know, you watch a kid do division today and it's, you just wouldn't recognize it. Kids don't, at least my kid, never learned long division anywhere near the way I did. But remember, there was a whole chapter in whatever elementary school, middle school, a whole big chapter about multiplying fractions.
Yeah.
How hard it is. Well, let's say you want to do 1 7/16 times 7. I mean, if I sat down, but like, believe me, we were watching local news the other night because my wife had it on and I said, I really hate this and I want to turn it off. And I'm going to be honest with you because I have a metric in life, which is if I died doing this, that thing, how would I feel about that? If I knew that I would die during this event, how would I feel about that? If my life ended while I was watching local news, that would make me sad.
Yeah.
I would, if I died trying to mentally on a piece of paper multiply fractions, that would make me very sad. Or as my friend John Sindelar said in his second year of college, when my friend frightened him at the library, he said, I would really hate to die while translating the German word for absurd.
All right. I mean, of all the, okay, can I just talk for a second?
Talk more about this notebook. I love it.
And about, I want to talk about Fahrenheit and Celsius for a second.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. We're beards.
All right.
Fahrenheit beards. That's
so here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there that don't, they understand that like most of the world uses, you know, Celsius and we use Fahrenheit in the United States, but they don't know much past that.
You should see the Venn diagram.
Yeah.
It's completely bananas. I mean, it's like us in the Congo or something.
So the concept, my understanding, I could be wrong on all this. My understanding about Celsius is that it was based around water, that water freezes at 0 degrees Celsius.
Zero is frozen. Boils 100 is boiling.
At 100 in Celsius. Okay. Now in, as you know, in Fahrenheit, water freezes at 32 degrees and boils at 212 degrees. And the reason you know 212 is because you have a nice tea kettle and you know when you want to make black tea versus green tea. And green tea is like 160, 170 and coffee is perfect at 195. And then it's boiling at 212 for black tea, et cetera.
My wife is a boiler and I can't get her off it.
Yeah.
She keeps resetting the kettle to 212 and I keep putting it down.
Is this Zojirushi?
It's really fancy. Well, it's fancy and it's got a long gooseneck.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can we please have my Cuisinart back? This thing drives me bananas. But I guess if you're really picky about your exact temperature, especially if you're a tea person, good point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know, I'm with you. Keep going. So yeah, you know that, but you've learned that. It's really more like you've memorized that more than internalized that.
Yes.
I bet you at a younger age, you take two kids of equivalent ages and all of the things being equal. I bet a kid in Europe who's learned metric versus a kid in America who's learning imperial, I bet you most little kids can estimate distance in kilometers there better than in miles here.
Probably.
And the conversions are trivial because it's all, like I say, it's all just tenths.
It's much easier to know how many millimeters and or centimeter and centimeters in a meter, et cetera. That's very easy. 10. It's always 10.
Yeah, yeah. And these are all based on real world things, right? Mm-hmm. So like we agree that boiling and freezing are a good, like a big deal in the numbers for each of these. And there's other things like that. You got like whatever, a cubit is a king's arm and that kind of stuff over time. There's been a lot of those sort of cockney.
But you would think that because I'm saying that makes sense for Celsius being 0 and 100, the reality of that is really most of the time we don't care so much about when water boils and freezes. The only time we care about that is if there's like a freeze warning or something like that. What we do care about though is how is our personal temperature.
What should I wear?
What's the weather and how does it make me feel? So back in the time when Fahrenheit was kind of created, they made a little bit of a rounding decision. And they said the human body temperature is 100 degrees. Well, we know it's average 98.6 or 99 or 97, depending
what
you're
reading. It's not even that. That's what healthy white people were in the 40s.
Right.
Yes, so it's not everybody.
It's not everybody. Like my base temperature, I've taken it because I wanted to know this. My sort of normal temperature is 97.3. That's my normal.
What is a base temperature? Is that rectal?
No, it just means the temperature that you take throughout the day and you find out like what your temperature is most of the time when you're not sick.
That's manic. Okay. I should do that.
So try it. It only takes a couple of days. So mine is 97.3.
How many times do you do it during? Because, you know, I've got a Kinza smart thermometer.
Do it three times a day. Do it once in the morning, once in the midday, once in the evening.
It's a health kit thermometer. So when you take your, as HomeKit or HealthKit apps, based apps go, it's a good app. You take your temperature, find out if you've got a fever or whatever. It's really quick. You do put it in your mouth. You can put it in your butt, but that's up to you. You have to change the setting for that. But then it goes into the app. And if it's high, it tells you that it's high and says, like, looks like you have a fever. Do you have any other symptoms? It'll look for COVID in your area, stuff like that. And then it gets pushed into HealthKit. I just wanted to mention Kinza. I'll find it for notes.
So the reality, though, is If you fudge it a little bit, it's only a couple degrees below 100. It's about 100.
Yeah. It matters a lot, though, if it's like, if it's a baby with a fever, that's fine. If it's a very old person with a fever, that difference between...
Yeah, it's a big difference.
It's a big, comes to matter.
And and anyone who's ever had a fever will tell you there's a huge difference between 99 and 101. But the point is...
There's a huge difference between 99 and 101 and then between 101 and like 102 or 3.
Yeah, it's huge difference.
That's another even huger difference. Right. That's like really seriously get to the hospital. But unless if it's a baby, because babies get high fevers.
If we forgive Fahrenheit for being a few degrees off when they say a 100 degrees is the human body temperature, if we forgive them that... and we say it's about 100, then what that says is that when someone says it's 100 degrees, even though that's a little bit off, they're saying it's about
100 degrees air-to-air temperature, like you're in Vegas.
Yes. Okay. They're saying that's about as warm as a person. And so you have a reference point that makes more sense to you as a human being than the freezing point of water.
I completely disagree.
Do you?
Really?
Yes.
I mean, okay, so I'm being a little silly here. Just because that's what we do. We try to be amusing. You live in a place where it gets to 109 fairly regularly. 109. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like in a year, you will have probably dozens of days that where the, not even the feels like, but the normal temperature, the air temperature is over 100 degrees, right?
Yes.
But like about the last thing on my mind when it's 100 degrees outside is, yeah, that's about what my body feels like.
No, I agree with you. But the point of it is, if the reference point is your body temperature for the scale, then it's going to make more sense to you to understand what warm and cold is relative to the approximate temperature of a person.
Oh, you're saying it's almost like not a mnemonic, but a heuristic.
Heuristically.
Like the way you can touch different parts of your hand for a steak.
Yes, exactly. So that relatively, if I were to say to you, think about the boiling point of water or think about an ice cube, that's much tougher for a regular person to imagine than it is to say, think about how warm you are. As a person, or if you put your hand on your kid's head, how warm they are, that's 100 degrees, basically. So you have a relative point in yourself. So if I were to say to you, what's a nice day in San Francisco? You might say, 65, 70 degrees is pretty nice. I know what that feels like because I know that that's cooler than me.
How does it? It's a nice day outside. It's about the same as a body that's been dead for
yeah, it's like a week old dead body. That's how cold that is.
Let me touch your wrist. I wish you wouldn't actually. Thank you.
But my response, response to be, if you want to get really technical about it, anyone who prefers Celsius for temperature is being silly. They should prefer Kelvin. Because Kelvin measures not water, but the absolute temperatures of the universe. Absolute zero is absolute zero.
As its measuring bar.
Yes.
So like even metric, even or especially metric, and this is actually a fun rabbit hole to go down on YouTube, is that, you know, there's standards, right? You know, like there's a gram, there's the THE gram.
Yes.
You can get, and the thing is you can buy like a prosumer gram. Title. You can buy a prosumer gram for calibrating equipment, right? And you can still keep it under, like in science, like under a bell jar or whatever you do to maintain exactly that gram. But like if you have to calibrate sensitive equipment, I think there's probably computer ways to do that now, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But there is, I think there is an actual gram. There might even be an actual liter. Maybe somewhere in Paris, there's like the original liter. It's just all Louis Pasteur's urine or something. but you're saying when you talk about these, you know, it's like this coastline of Scotland problem, like how long is your ruler? How specific is your ruler? In this case, like you feel like we as cultures adapt or maladapt to the system that we're used to?
I think so. And, you know, you hear people in like the UK or France or wherever when there's any kind of heat wave because they don't, as most people now know, they don't have any kind of air conditioning systems over there because their weather is so good all the time that when it actually gets hot or cold, they're like, we don't know what to do. It's warm.
God, you sound like Syracuse. California, you can just leave everything outside. You don't have weather. It's like, oh, okay, sure.
Well, the point is like they freak out and they'll be like, it was 35 degrees. I have no idea what like 35 degrees is. It doesn't sound impressive to me. But if I'm like, it was 109, like just the sound of that. Like, oh, what? How was it yesterday? You know, it was 90 degrees yesterday.
You know what that would be? That's like, Kelvin, let me try.
An impact.
109 option shift 8 F in Kelvin. You know, you can do that in Spotlight.
That's cool.
Can you do that in Spotlight? Mm. It's 315.93 Kelvins.
Right.
You must be this many Kelvins tall to ride the Scorpio.
I think everyone should be using Kelvin because water is going to boil at 373 degrees.
Okay, hang on. So what did I say was a nice day? Like 65?
You said 65 maybe? Was a good day.
65 is 291 Kelvins.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of Kelvins.
It means something. But that means something.
Specific. It means something. Yeah.
See, and that's why
visit the gram.
I feel like if you went to, this is my test of things. If you went to a child, just imagine the scenario. You go to a young child, single digit age.
Is the child's parent there?
Yeah, they have to be.
Okay, good. All right, good. Good.
Okay. And
yeah, go ahead.
And you say to the child, you are about 100 degrees. You are about 100 degrees. Okay. Do you think that 80 degrees would be warm or cold? That's someone's close to me. It's probably pretty warm.
This kid. It's really weird.
And if you say, and then if I were to say, well, what if I told you it was 0 degrees out? They'd be like, oh, this could be very cold. If I say, what about 110? And they'll say, that's hot. Whereas if you tell them, well, water boils at 100 degrees. Do you think that 80 degrees Celsius would be warm?
That really sounds like you're gaslighting this kid right in front of his mom.
I'm just saying, like Fahrenheit makes so much more sense. So much more sense for temperature.
I think whatever you're used to makes sense.
No, I think Fahrenheit makes sense.
You mean in a larger, broader sense?
For everyone. Yeah.
It makes a broader sense.
Or Kelvin. Well, but yeah, Celsius has no business being. What's this?
I remember hearing
something. Oh, is that a gram? Is that that you sent me?
Yeah,
that's
a
prosumer gram.
It's obscure. It's called Le Grand. I don't know how you say K in French. The former global standard for the exact mass of 1 kilogram sits under lock and key outside Paris. I'm putting it in show notes. I guess agree to disagree. But I don't know. I think you're used to whatever you're used to. You know, it's like the weather that you grew up with and the food that you find comforting will have a role in the rest of your life. I think often hear of my grandfather who was born in South America and moved to Southwestern Ohio when he was, I think he was in his 20s, maybe 20s. Yeah. He was just about 20 when he moved to Cincinnati. And he was, well, for a variety of reasons, he was unhappy most of his adult life. But one of the reasons he was unhappy from 1933 to 1966 was that he was cold, as he felt cold all of the time. He got colds more than he did when he lived in British Guiana, right near where Jim Jones was. You know, his temple got knocked down and now it's USPS. They pay paradise and put up a place next to the Fillmore. And so my grandfather was unhappy that whole time. And he finally said, Cassie, we're moving to Florida. Right before my grandson is born, let's move to Florida. And she said, yeah, right? Let's get out of here. I think she actually said it like that. We'll pack up our symphonic Jackie Gleason records and weird mid-century modern clocks and move to Clearwater, Florida. And he was so much happier. Like all old people, he loves being hot. But what I'm trying to get at is he never shed that what the feeling of what a normal temperature is. And perhaps similarly for me, and I might be exaggerating this to make a point, but I don't think I am. I, on the other hand, grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, because I am his, you know, second order progeny, and then moved to Florida. Pardon me. I was moved to Florida in 1979.
Yes.
And from 1979 till 1999, I lived in Florida, and like I had some good times. But I'll tell you a pattern through all of that is like I was almost always uncomfortably hot. I would by the time I was in high school and had gym and stuff like that, like there's not only that, but I would just bring a second shirt to school every day and change shirts at lunch. This is in an air conditioned.
Just want to feel fresh.
I would still change. Yes, because I mean, just like this is why my mom like would park twice in a strip mall. Because to get from here to there, you want to be in an air-conditioned car, you know? So what I'm trying to get at is grandpa grew up in South America and then was uncomfortably cold in Ohio. I grew up in Ohio and was always uncomfortably hot in San Francisco. And now, boy.
Now you can never get comfortable.
Well, I can't. That's my problem. But it's true. I adjust to just sleep on my side. No, but for me, honestly, like this, there's so many ways. I don't talk about it a lot because here's the thing, Dan. A kind and good American never brags about things where they are actually lucky. You can be fortunate and kind of incidentally lucky, or you can be lucky and that kind of makes you feel fortunate. I live in a place that, as it turns out, in so many ways is exactly the weather, better put, my neighborhood, like my 5-block area is the climate that I like. And what's the difference? I don't know. But like, it's one thing to say like, oh, it's going to rain and here's the temperature. I'm talking about the climactic specificities of my weird ass city. Further to that. And there's like a really good book about the climate of the Bay Area. It's a thin little volume from the 50s or 60s. That's incredible to teach you very quickly why, what is unique about the Bay Area's climate, because it is unique and it is weird. But even like, I love it here so much. I don't like the city, qua city, in a lot of ways. There's a lot about it that's kind of just horrible. But like, honestly, Dan, I like, you know, people who are like, oh, it's getting cold, I can't wait to put on my sweater. I'm like that all the time. Like I wear, when I'm someplace, here's the thing. Like in Florida, you can't take off more clothes. And even if you did, it wouldn't help.
No.
You wear you could wear like a chemise muumuu and still be hot. In Bacon Ray, we finally had to make a rule. You can't wear shorts when we play live. A rule we quickly, you know, rescinded. Because if you're living in Tallahassee, Florida, and you're loading in and loading out, and it's July, brother, you're going to want to be wearing shorts. This is why every picture you see of people in Florida, they look like slightly advanced obese children. Because that's how they all dress. Because it's so effing hot.
I love when people who live in wonderful climates, like where it is in the 50s, 60s, and maybe 70s-ish, say, how could you wear shorts? It's so unprofessional. It looks so bad. I'm like, you spend like a week in the summer in Florida.
You did that earlier a little bit when you were making fun in a similar way of people. And that's what gets me, with all respect, which is what gets me to this point of, let me just try and summarize the entire thing in a sentence. Never brag about your weather, because like on the one hand, and that is a big pattern that goes way beyond, and this is a very wisdom document-y. Okay. So like when I say that, you can take that exactly on the face and understand what I'm trying to say, which is like, if you're somewhere where there's not a hurricane right now, don't brag about it, because you had absolutely no role in that, unless you're a wizard. Like you had absolutely no role in why your climate or weather is good. And sort of concurrently, those people have absolutely no role in why it's bad. Now you could say, you stupid poor people, why do you live in trailers in low-lying areas that always get hit by tornadoes? Well, that's because the only places poor people can afford are where tornadoes go.
Right.
Because where tornadoes, did y'all just never figure that out? Why are poor people's houses always being destroyed in tornadoes? It's not that complicated. It creates a miniature tornado alley to be in low-lying areas, which is, believe it or not, where mobile homes are built, which are uniquely not durable in a tornado, because that's where poor people can afford to buy or rent land.
That's right.
That's why. And it's not really as funny when you look at it that way. Don't brag about weather. What's the broader pattern for that? Kurt Vonnegut's father told him never to celebrate, you know, the defeats of your enemies in war, never to celebrate the death of people in war. And I think it's a similar thing here. It drives me nuts when people say stuff like, oh God, San Francisco, it rains 1 inch or half an inch and everybody's freaking out. I live in Rainville where it rains all the time. And like, we don't have a problem. It's like, are you simple? Are you really that simple? The same way Syracuse makes fun of us. It's like, you know what? If we needed to prepare for Boston winters, we would, but we don't. The infrastructure of each community in America is situated differently to, by and large, be the least costly way to have some kind of public infrastructure that will accommodate the normal ranges of weather and other kinds of conditions in life. Oh my God, everybody drives like an idiot when it rains. Well, yeah, you know why? Because it doesn't rain that much here. People haven't had that much, not here, but anywhere. When people say like, oh, here's the thing about you that shows you're stupid and I'm smart, which I hate. And which is like, oh, you're stupid and I'm smart, because everybody there freaks out. We get tornadoes all the time and it's fine. Well, do you think there might be some differences between your two communities? Not right. Least including things like money and the ability to buy storm windows, or the ability, like, we don't have hurricane windows here because we don't ordinarily get hurricanes. We don't have air conditioning here because it doesn't ordinarily get hot enough, often enough, long enough to need air conditioning. And that would be over-engineering the entire area to do that. But then what happens? You get a little something that I happen to think might be real, which is versions of climate change, where sometimes it's raining a lot more in that area now. Well, guess what? That infrastructure, when Johnson put out some money for infrastructure in the 60s and we decided to build universities and fix roads for once, you know, maybe Eisenhower's highways need upkeep. You don't invest in infrastructure for things that are outside normal parameters. And the same is true. Every time somebody out there like makes fun of somebody because it's raining and they're freaking out. Well, like, first of all, you're being kind of a dick about that person's lived experience, but that's your problem, not mine. The much broader problem is, oh my God, do you have any idea how big the United States is? Do you have any idea how different every community is? And why does that relate to weather? Because there are people who, quote, brag about their weather in ways that go way beyond ambient air temperature, where they kind of, you know, like they used to say about George W. Bush, he was born on third and thinks he hit a triple. A lot of people are lucky enough to live somewhere that has the infrastructure and, let's just be honest, the financing, the whatever, to prepare for different kinds of things. But it is a uniquely American ignorance when we yell at other people because we think we've got good weather because we're good people, and they can't drive, so they're dumb. That's what I wanted to say about that. Never brag about the weather.
Never brag about the weather.
Can we talk about the weather? Can we talk about the government?
We can talk about whatever we want. Can I tell you about something I like?
About something you...
I would...
Go ahead.
I would like to tell you about...
I also want to talk about my notebook. I put it in notes.
I'd like to tell you about CODA.
CODA.
CODA is really awesome. What CODA does, it brings together the best of documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one platform. So that way you're not going back and forth between different tabs, different tools. CODA is awesome because, especially if you do remote work like all of us basically do now, it really helps centralize mm-hmm. all of the processes, all of the shared knowledge. It's together in one place, and it is a really good time to get started with it because they have these really, really great planning capabilities. So like it helps you stay aligned because you can manage your planning cycles in one location, which is a big thing. You ever heard of the OKRs? OKRs? Everyone's talking about OKRs?
Oh, you know, hang on. Overall knowledge ratios.
OKRs?
Am I close? Overall, no, wait. Ovoid? Kit Kat racers.
It's more simple than that.
Oh,
you're overcomplicated.
You're more simple than that.
Objectives and key results. Get confused between OKRs and KPIs.
I've become addicted to OKRs.
Okay. Don't get confused between those two things.
No.
Okay. But here's the thing. You can set and measure OKRs. This gives you full visibility across the teams. You can communicate. You can collaborate on different documents, roadmaps. I mean, all of this is, it's all there. And if you want a platform that's going to let your team collaborate effectively and focus on your shared goals, you can get started with CODA today. It's for free. So you go to CODA. Wow. It's CODA, CODA.io/work. That's the one that they gave us. I like that. That's less to type.
It's very, it's very strong. It's like a load bearing word.
Yeah. CODA.io/work. So go there and check it out. This is a really great tool. I'm a big UX person. I love the design of this site. I love the way that it works. Really do go check it out. If you're doing remote team stuff, I love this. So go check it out. CODA.io/work. Thanks very much. Get started for free. Thanks very much to CODA for making this show possible.
Thanks, CODA. Buck, buck. This is real quick, and then we can bounce like a ball. I wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, I would like to be open with a compliment.
Yeah, to me.
So bad in his pronunciation.
Kino. Wait, say that again. Say that again because you cut out. You're cut out right now completely.
Lately. Is it better now?
Now it is good.
Okay. I wanted to compliment you for you put the right link to the right store. I did not even remember the name of the store. I just know it's where my kid buys Smitsky's. I'll put Smitsky's in notes too.
What are those? Smitsky's.
Well, you remember, like, you know, of course, you've had a girl child in your life. You've had a boy child. You know, kids get into a certain kind of toy for a while. Like one was like Shopkins.
Thing. Oh yeah.
Syracuse and I, our kids both were very into Shopkins for a while, like little things. Smitsky's are these little, like little anodyne, personalityless little characters in positions. And they're really cute. And you can clip one on your jacket or have one doing yoga. It's another one of those terrible, terrible things that children get obsessed with. But you knew that Kinokuniya. Okay.
Kino, which means book. Kuniya, which means
like Kino Lorber, like the movie.
Kino is book, and Kuniya means awesome selection of pens and stuff in Japantown, San Francisco.
Oh my God! Isn't it, you learn something every day.
All right, that's the.
And then you make up things every couple hours.
America making up words for things and numbers that mean nothing to you or the rest of the world. I've been learning all these acronyms for stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like OKRs and the other one is a BPMN.
And you got your PKMs.
Business process model and notation.
Oh, what about, there's several of these that I've really terrible, terrible acronyms that I've learned about from listening to podcasts about the TV industry.
Oh,
you know about EBITDA. You got EBITDA.
Yes,
right?
I hate that one.
That's everything.
It's the worst.
But increasingly tortious drawings of art. EBITDA. And then there's the one that's like, oh, this terrible one they use on a TV podcast. The one that's like your value per customer. Oh, they're all terrible. And then there's another one I've been hearing a lot lately that's not PKM. PKM's personal knowledge manager. But it's like something stunning business metrics or something. You know what? I don't care. I wanted to point you to two things that I put into notes because it's always two things with me. If you click that link, and you don't need to, but, and I'm not pimping this. I don't make any money from this. You do. But it's called Nemosyne. Nemosyne. And my Japanese notebook is called Nemosyne, I think. And it is also an A5 notebook. It is spiral. And it's the perfect size and form factor.
I love that brand. Love that brand. I have several of their notebooks.
Right here. And you can do all, if you can't do it.
Did you get the little case that wraps around them? The little black thin little, I have one of those too.
No, and the thing I love about this is there's several things I love about this. There's a lot of notebooks I like where I like the notebookiness of the pages, but it's only available either in some kind of binding, which is like a showstopper for me that I'll explain in a minute, or it's top spiral bound, you know, like a steno pad. What I like about this, it's A5, which means it's, how can I put this into American? It's approximately the size of half a sheet of paper, US printer paper, letter size paper. So 8.27 inches by 5.83 inches. Oh, also I got to find that CGP gray video. And it's got the grid on mine. What did you say yours were? 2 millimeter dots? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think. Let me see again what this thing says. It says... You know, I'm at the age where I have to like lift my glasses up to read the 2 millimeter grid notes.
Two millimeter is really small.
It's very
these
small.
Are 5 millimeter and it's plenty small for me. Also, it's dots, not, it is a grid technically.
Oh, dots instead of squares.
It is inferred. Yeah, dots instead of lines.
I like both.
No, they're both good, but it's also got stuff like if you like that nonsense that I do, like for example, I have a way that I use. How can I put this? You don't evolve something transitively. Something has changed about the way I use notebooks, depending on what I sort of imprint on as a notebook. So things I've done in other notebooks before, I bring to this one, but in new ways. So like, you could fake a pretty good, what's that note style? Cornell. You could do Cornell with this if you like that kind of thing. I mean, I don't, but it does have a thing at the top where you can have a, it's got an area at the top for metadata, you know? You can put your title, your date, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I generally do, I'll write at least the day of the week, you know, and what's happening. And, but this is really just for jotting things down. I love the spiral part. And here's why. Because most of the time I want this to be in true A5 size to take up the least amount of space possible on my desk, right? So when it's in its sort of native state, I'm on a fresh page with all of the previous pages turned underneath via the spiral. So that's very difficult to do with a Moleskine. That's very difficult to do with a legal pad.
Yeah.
Because now, it's like when it's so nice sometimes when you get a beautifully printed book. Sometimes you get a perfect bound book and like the spine just cracks open if you try to read it. There's other kinds, like certain kinds of like high end. I want to say actually Japanese books that are perfect bound, but then have that like sort of a crease on the cover and the back that let you push it down a little bit.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
This is full on spiral. So right. If I'm in my normal mode, like I am right now, all those old pages are turned around. But this notebook is, as something I've said for a long time, this notebook is where anything can go. Anything can go in here. I feel no compunction. I buy these in 5 at a time. I go through them. I have pretty healthy relationship with just starting a new page for whatever reason. I don't feel like I need to fill it up. It's not as costly as those Italian notebooks, that you can't flip over. But I'll tell you what I do is there might be a thing here. I'll do this right now. If I do flip back a few pages, and this happens a lot, like yesterday, I had this list of like 15 items. Do Roderick on the line, calibrate my new filaments, print some more silica canisters. I got some paint. I got a paint set for making rust on 3D prints, and I got another paint set for making patinas.
Oh, that's nice.
Like the eye of patina. And so that's just a big old list. And then I've got some specific things where I'll like doing my, it's like almost like an engineering notebook, which is a very fancy way of saying, I want to keep track of something I'm experimenting with. I printed a model 5 different ways. And this is even faster and easier to deal with than drafts or Google Sheets. If it's just as simple as, this one's printed standard with, no ironing. This one's printed standard with ironing. This one's printed fine, et cetera. And then I write the number on the bottom of the item, But what's beautiful is like right now, I'm on this nice page of new Dan stuff. I can at any time, this sounds so obvious, I don't care, open up a certain number of those old pages and flip them so that now it's open, which is like A5 times 2,
right?
Spiral in the middle.
Yes.
But now I have access to those other pages that can flip over almost like I'm an animator.
I know what you're talking about.
Bring forward? Yeah, is there anything cool I need to bring forward from that? I'm not talking about Bujo. There's nothing official. And then the only thing I want to also add, I put a link to that Kenza thermometer. You'll make some money from that. The other reason I like this and the way that I do this, two of my weird productivity ticks come together in a really wholesome way here. I think I've told you before that something I started doing in Task Paper that I've carried on with my stuff today is that when I use a word like context or tag, you know what I mean, right? So when I say clean the bed of the printer, the context or tag for that is office. Right? Because context in David Allen's Getting Things Done is a unique opportunity or privation. An opportunity or privation, I'm putting this in my own words, an opportunity or privation often unique to a location. I can only talk to my wife when she's here with me. I can only clean the bed of my printer when I'm at the office, famously from David Allen. I can only mow my lawn when I'm at the house. So no matter how much I need to mow my lawn, it doesn't make sense to stress about it while you're on a plane because you can't mow your lawn. That's the power of context.
Right.
So in bringing and updating context, I've tried to greatly pare down the number of, and again, in the app that I use, which is called Things by Cultured Code, they call them tags, which is, it's the same thing.
Yeah,
you can apply tags all over the place. Go crazy. Do all you want. Doesn't matter. Here's the thing. A thing I picked up using Task Paper, and I think I might have done this in OmniFocus, but the point being, all of my contexts, which I do use and utilize, all of my contexts are uniquely named in such a way that there's no shared first letter of the contexts, which seems weird at first. But for example, I'm almost done. I don't really care, but I am almost done. For example, like in this one, like what are my tags? Or contexts, if you will. House, office, errands, buy online, Mac, iOS, calls, right? Now, what's weird about those? Well, if you notice or not, each one of those begins with a different letter of the alphabet. And so somebody might say, well, yeah, okay, that's great, Einstein. You made contexts with, why does that matter? Well, saliently, it means that I can type the first letter. If I type the letter H, I know it's only the first thing that will pop up is house. And I mean, obviously, also then I try to avoid overmuch having letters in other names. This sounds dumb, but it makes it so fast to know. It becomes all of your, this becomes a no-look app where H always means house, O always means office, E always means errands, M always means Mac, D always means draft. Well, why don't you say write? Well, I could say write, but W is already taken by a David Allen context called WO or waiting on. Which, this sounds nuts, but when you're doing this stuff all day long, especially in something like Task Paper, where you're going tap, 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 right? You tap, 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 get into the area where you select a context. It's, first of all, it's just handy and fast that you don't have namespace pollution about those. Like, you don't have to worry that you've ambiguously maybe chosen the wrong thing. Not that it's huge stakes, there's a reason for this. So, Why do that? Well, that it's super fast. It was really fast in Task Paper. It's still very useful to me in Things. But can I pull it all together? Because of this system that I cobbled together and have imprinted on, the system being the context for something is always begins with a contextually unique letter. Guess what that means? That means from now on, actually, I could actually, you know, because people use keyboards with no letters on it, I could actually change the names of all of those contexts to just the first letter. Do you follow?
Yes.
Because I know if I see an H, it always means house. And also, just again to clarify, a house is not a home and work is not an office. Work and home are aspects of areas of concentration in your life. House and office are locations. Home is not a context, unless that helps you. But I could actually just put H and I would know what it means. I could just put, okay, cool. Why are you telling us this, genius? What's this have to do with your goddamn notebook? Well, my notebook, like non-notebooks, has a kind of implied, I mentioned the Cornell note-taking system, which I don't use. I mentioned that earlier. Big part of Cornell is you have the top part, a bottom part, and then left and right columns that you use. There's an implied, do you have an implied left column on your pages? Do you have like an implied, like in my case, like the title is over the right main area.
Right.
But you're like, you could draw down like a fifth.
You gotta leave a margin.
Probably. You could draw a line
a
fifth of the way down the page.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? Whether this is in a notebook or whether this is on the whiteboard magnet on our fridge, the system still works. H always means house. O always means office. E always means errands. So if I'm getting something out of the fridge and I notice we're running low on half and half, I will write down, this sounds crazy. This is really great when I'm power puttering though. I'll write down half and half with an implied by half and half. And then if I'm having a very busy day with that whiteboard, I might also then put a B to the left of that. If I need to take out the trash, there's an H next to that. If I need to do something with my 3D printer, there's an O next to that. So nice. The same system, I don't know if that's making sense. The same system.
No, it does. It makes perfect sense.
I don't know if it makes sense in the abstract like this, but if you try it, you can only really understand this if you try it. But like what started out as a way to waste less time and save keystrokes in a Mac app, like, became something I brought into another Mac app and then brought into a third Mac app, which is consequently also on my iOS devices. But it also, because of that early on design decision about letters being unique, it's now, I only realized this in the last couple months, I've been doing it forever and really only kind of put it all together, that it's already in my bones that H means house and O means office. So I can use that in the real world just as easily as I can on my Mac. And although the benefits I get from that, they're complementary, but really quite different. The benefit on a Mac is I need to type less. And importantly, Dan, you understand this, I'm typing unambiguously. I never worry that I've got 35 different contexts, 33 of which I don't use, but I've got code because I planned out my life in tags. Oh, I imagine what my life is like and I've made up metadata. Ah. Now you got to live with that. You got all that crap in there. It would be, again, that would be like putting your fork in the hope chest. Like, it doesn't belong in there. It goes in the fork area. And you could, in the dark, get up in the middle of the night and with a minimum of light, know which drawer to open and pull out a fork with almost no light, because you need a night fork title. You follow? But I think it's interesting. It's interesting on one kind of medium level that a thing that started out to save keystrokes on a Mac now is just as useful on iOS, because, you know, I'm selecting with my damn thumb like a monster, but also that I brought that into the real world on a whiteboard magnet. I buy sheets of whiteboard magnet and put it on things, on our fridge, and then in this notebook as well. But can I also just point out, and this is what makes it back to work, and then we can leave, that look for those patterns in your life. It may surprise you to realize that better design decisions, earlier design decisions, making a good design decision early in one domain can not only have benefits in other domains, but could actually be possibly adjusted to fit in other domains. Mm-hmm. And like, who knows where the end of this is? I don't know. I'm not saying this is the greatest thing in the world. I'm just saying it's really, if you want to be better at this stuff, and as you know, for years, I've not been comfortable with that word productivity.
Right.
But if you would like to open up more time to be creative and unstressed, I think a big part of that is realizing repeatable patterns where you can disambiguate, where you can shorten time and effort. And again, to quote myself finally from the wisdom document, when you're a knowledge worker, it is my belief that a big part of your job, I mean, as Peter Drucker said, I didn't invent this, but Peter Drucker said, like in the 60s, being a knowledge worker means not just doing knowledge work, but figuring out what work needs to be done, which is the really important distinction. That's what a lot of people I think miss, is that deciding what to do today, deciding what to do now, and consequently, knowing with confidence that you've decided not to do, as the Taoists say, 10,000 other things, that's a big part of knowledge work. But deciding how you're going to do that work is also part of it. And right, looking for patterns for improvement. And again, I'm not saying you got to have a minimalist desk and spend your entire day coming up with all of these, scaffoldings and infrastructures all day long. There's work to be done, but that is in knowledge work. The point I'm trying to make is that in knowledge work, it's if you want to improve at knowledge work, please listen closely to this. Let's talk about something important.
Okay.
If you want to improve at knowledge work, you're going to have to learn how to separate the things that are necessarily difficult about your job from the things that are unnecessarily harder than they need to be about your job. So, and the way I phrase that in the wisdom document, which I will put in notes, is that you need to learn about the parts of your job that are difficult, and that's why you get the big bucks, as against the parts of your job that are difficult and often make you wonder if you should probably be making more big bucks because this really sucks to do.
Uh-huh.
So you have to learn. Does that distinction make sense?
It does to me, yes.
Like, if part of your job is having difficult conversations with people on your team, or part of your job is like, I mean, I'm trying to think of things that are completely exclusive of human weirdness, although that's quite difficult. But the reason you have to, just to like really put this in pigs and bunnies, The reason somebody gave you a job or you found a job or created a job in knowledge work is because you're good at figuring out how to add value to information. You're good at figuring out how, when, and basically just how to do that job. That is the work of knowledge work. It is somewhat recursive in that sense. You have to decide all the things you're not going to do today without expressly needing to write them down, which is not something you'll be good at in a week. It takes a very long time to tacitly understand, accept, and operationalize all the things you're not doing right now.
Right.
That's one reason a system can be helpful. But if there are part there, like, have you really thought about this, guys, team, you magnificent bastards? Have you really thought about the stress from your job or the difficulty from your job, the pain from your job? Have you really interrogated how much of that is endemic to that job at that, say, company? Your job is difficult because they need someone to do that difficult job, mm-hmm. and they feel that you're a good fit for that. Versus, it's so subtle. Do not think you're above this. So subtle, but then learn to contrast that with the things that are really difficult and don't need to be, or are more difficult than they need to be. And again, let's go back. First principles, Dan. If you are a knowledge worker, a priori, part of your job is figuring out what and how to do it. Just remember, if you're not making those decisions about how and what to do, reconsider how much of a knowledge worker you are and maybe talk to your boss. But if you actually are in a position to say things like, I get to pick who I call back first, or I get to decide how often to check email, because my brain knows how often I need to do that to accomplish what needs to be done today. Mm-hmm. But you also then need to separate, to disambiguate all that terrible, terrible stuff that really feels like, quote, how your job is. So that might even be, I am just sick of going to cake in the conference room. I am sick of going to lunch with my friends, or I'm just sick of always having to deal with this one person who talks to me every time they go to the copy machine. I don't know, but you will. If you interrogate this, you will start looking, and this is actually ultimately a positive thing. If you do this well, it's an extremely positive thing. And if you decide that this is not a thing, I can't help you with why you're sad. But if you start learning to notice the things that are difficult because that's your job, and you can always adjust. I mean, potentially you can adjust that. If you need more money, ask for more money. If you honestly think you can get more money working somewhere else at the same job, consider that. But that's not part of this particular assignment. The assignment is to realize that stuff that's difficult because it has to be due by a certain time, or it has to be done to a certain level of quality, or it has to be done with a team of people you don't particularly like. That might all just be like, that's because that's what your job is.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking about people, and then as against the things where you do actually have control to adjust that. And I was falling asleep last night, completely unrelated. I was thinking about how, like, It is endemic to a lot of media that people like to write about how terrible it is to work in media. And it certainly can be terrible. But as I was falling asleep, I thought about this thing I could never say publicly or say on the internet.
Sure.
But I was thinking, it was the headline I was imagining was, local toilet paper roll hates how much people shit in restrooms. If you don't like people shitting in restrooms, spend less time there. And definitely don't get a job as a roll of toilet paper. If you have an aversion to people using the restroom, don't get a job as toilet paper.
Right.
So I think that's that weird night thought is kind of applicable here, because if you have not learned to differentiate the parts of your job that are necessarily definitionally difficult from the parts that are somewhere from trivially to painfully difficult but fixable, then you're only doing half of the knowledge work, or mm-hmm. you're only doing a third of the knowledge work.
Right.
You're only doing the knowledge work that somebody has cut up and put onto a plate for you. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Do you ever feel that? Because like, you've had so much stuff where you've worked independently. You've had stuff where you work for, with, above, however, people, but every job, I mean, and by that, I'm trying to differentiate between a career or whatever, but like, the job to be done will have stuff about it that sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it didn't have things about it that suck, you would not have a job. If the trash, we'll put it this way, if the people in the bathroom could wipe without toilet paper, you would lose your job as a roll of toilet paper, right? But somebody has to put the toilet paper into the bathroom. Somebody has to fix the bathroom when it clogs up.
somebody has to refill, does that look clean to you? Somebody has to refill the paper towel things or whatever, right? Those are all jobs. And like, I'm sorry to treat a notional made up straw man listener like an idiot, but like, if your job weren't difficult, you wouldn't have it.
That's right. Great point.
And
that's so true.
That doesn't mean that what it means is you are in a unique position as a knowledge worker to choose to differentiate between those things. And here's a funny thing that happens, I feel, and this will differ for everybody. But if you've accepted that there's those two kinds of things, right? There's the things that are necessarily difficult about your job. The things that either are unknown difficult, assumed difficult, or actually difficult about your job, but can be amended, reduced, improved, right? That's part of the work too. But the funny thing is that you may not get until you've really sat with that, is that once you start improving and minimizing the amount of that second kind of difficult, you may find you have a lot more time, cycles, and attention to do the first part. If you're spending less time and feeling less stress, honestly, because I think that does matter. If you're feeling less stress about all the stuff that could be better and you just haven't bothered to fix it because you assume it's all the same, quote, job, well, if you haven't tried to address those things, then you may not realize that you could probably improve on the things that are necessarily difficult. It's not that complicated to see and figure out. If you're spending less time on garbage, you might be able to become a better roll of toilet paper. And that's why I get the big bucks, or used to. You feel good about that?
I love that. Yes.
All right. What did I say? A better roll of toilet paper?
Yeah, I captured it.
That's pretty. Thank you very much. I feel like it's been an hour and 41 minutes and 13 seconds, so we should probably button it up.
All right.
Okay. I love you.
Love you too, Merlin Man.